And what kind of impact did getting the ACE have on your day-to-day work? So obviously you've gone from using these quite sort of faffy, heavy desk calculators to just having this enormous computer. Did it have quite a big impact?
It varied. There were some who took to it straight away. I mean, at the time when I was transferred from the desk machine, a bloke called Ted York, who I think I saw his name somewhere, he was transferred from the Horace machine, and he really lapped it up. He was very good, and he was writing programs rather than managing the thing, but he was a great enthusiast. He then left to go to manage a machine at RE at Farnborough. There were others who didn't take to it very well. One of the star operators who'd come from the Admiralty, she was a Cambridge graduate, on her desk machine, she didn't make mistakes, and if she did, she could trap them straight away. But on the computer, it was easy to make a mistake in a program, and the thing would just go haywire, and she would panic at this. Or if you press the wrong button. You know, like when you got a mobile, you press the wrong button. Well, you think it's all gone wrong. Well, it hasn't. Computers are a bit like that. And so she was never great at it. Whereas in general, you'd have thought she might have been our best programmer because she had the widest experience of desk machines and methods. She's the oldest. So she didn't take to it very well. Another one who didn't take to it very well was her boss, Dr. Fox, who was very happy with these. And he said, oh, it's too much trouble. And I remember once when we just got started solving these simultaneous equations, he had a set of six to solve. So he sent them to us. And, well, it wasn't one of our better days. There'd been a delay in getting it punched up and then it hadn't gone through the machine. And said, well, I could have done that in half an hour. But he then left us. He went to Oxford. He became in charge of their computer lab. He was the first professor of computer science they had. And he realised that the machine could be very good.
Did it have a big impact on the speed? I mean, say you had a simultaneous equation and you had to do it by hand. And if you had to do it by, say, the Brunsviga and then with the Pilot ACE, what was kind of the speed difference between them?
Well, it's hard to tell. I would have thought six might be a good day's work on a Brunsviga. You'd have to punch it up, of course. That would take 5 minutes, but that would only be a couple of minutes computing.
Crikey, so you come from a day to a couple of minutes.
That sort of thing, yes. I remember before I got involved with the computers, we had a set of 16 equations to do. We just got six electric Munros. They're about that size, but they were electrically operated machines.
So that's kind of this thing.
They look like that.
Okay, so that's again about the size of a big...
But you press buttons.
Right, okay.
And it had a very good feature for solving these equations because you had to put in one number and multiply it by lots of things, so you only put it in once and it did that. And it was decided that to try these machines out, there was a gang of four or five of us, including Goodwin, who's the boss, and Fox, who's his second in command, and Joan Staten, this girl who was very good at it, and me, and I think one or two others. You start with 16, and you get rid of one of the numbers, so you then got 15, then you got 14, and then you got 13. We'd each do one. We weren't doing it continuously, so one would do it one day, and the next one would do it when they got some spare time. But by the end of the fortnight, I think we'd fouled up every one of the machines. They got jammed like that, these electric machines, every one of them. This was a weakness we'd found in the machines, and it would have taken about 2 weeks. Whereas on the computer, there's 5 minutes job, 5 minutes.
Wow, so that's from 2 weeks to 5 minutes.
And I don't have such good figures on that kind of problem, but eventually we solved 100. So you've got 100 numbers that way and 100 that way, punched up on cards. This was concerned with aircraft design, and this was quite a big job because you couldn't get many of the numbers into the machine. So you fed in a pack of cards with 100, and he'd punched out a pack with 99. Then you put the 99 in, you've got 98. And so the people who wanted this had to work overnight to do it because we couldn't spare time during the day. And so they did it over one night. And when we came in, there was just punch cards everywhere. And the punch was red hot with all the punching. And the reader was all full of fluff. So both the reader and the punch had to be serviced. But we got it done. It might have been 112. That was quite a real big job.
So this is one of the commercial jobs that you had to...
It was done for Inks Electric Aircraft Division.
So did you used to rent it by the hour? Did people just send you jobs and you kind of give them a quote for the computer time and your expertise?
£25 per hour of machine time. Sorry, £30 an hour. And for standard jobs like that, if there was a lot of punching to be done, there'd be a small add-on for that.
And you were quite unique in this, I guess, because this would have been the only computer in existence at that time.
Yes.
Did you have industry kind of clamouring on your door? Did you have customers?
We did, eventually.
So what sort of customers did you have? What sort of jobs did you do?
Well, the aircraft industry became a big user. It was put to them that they should get together and formulate the problems, their standard problems, in such a way that they could present them to a place like NPL and Ferrantes, who had a service bureau developing on their Pegasus machine, and I believe also to Leo Computers, Joe Lyons, who had got interested in this. So every month they'd get together with our representatives and take a typical problem, and we would go away and make sure we wrote the program for it. Now, because of our knowledge of the matrices, we were able to do this very, very quickly and very effectively. So we picked up the business, and the people like Ferrantes started complaining that we were undercutting them because we were charging £30 an hour and they were charging £40 an hour. But it wasn't that the price affected them. These firms couldn't care less. They were getting the money out of government. It was just that we did the job and they didn't. So that was a lot. But a problem that stuck with us for a very long time, which was the first one I personally had to do some programming for when I joined the A section. It was one that Jim Wilkinson had started, and they were passing their problems on to me to deal with in my section. And this was working out the coordinates of the ground from aerial photography. You picked a fine day and you went out and took a lot of photos and then sent the photos back, and mainly girls had to read off the places from the photos and the analysis of one photo took them about a day. And so we got involved in this, and the calculation side took about a minute. They still had to read off the data, but we cut down the time enormously because they said that on a nice fine day, they got enough photos to keep them busy for almost a year. Whereas now, of course, we were analysing the photos very, very quickly for them. And the next bottleneck was in reading the stuff from the photos. And so they then developed an automatic photo reader. Colonel Thompson developed this so that that side was speeded up. But that particular problem, which we started in 1951, it lasted the whole of the Ace and then the whole of the Deuce. When we closed the Deuce down, that was about the last program that people wanted.
So how many years was that?
That must have been 8 years, maybe.
Crikey, it sounds like really quite a phenomenal change, like kind of going from something taking years to taking days.
The Ordnance Survey had decided to get their own machine. Their staff used to come over at lunchtime and they would have the machine between 12 and 1 any day that they came. That meant that our operators could have their lunch break.
Did you find all the companies were so kind of embracing of the computer and the new technology? Because, I mean, to me it seems almost quite mind-boggling that people had to sit and do these kind of menial, slightly mundane routine calculations when today you just take it so much for granted you can shove it through a computer.
Things were developing fast elsewhere. Let's take nuclear energy. Now, departments only started at the end of the war. If I'd stayed at Fort Halsted, I'd probably have been sent to Aldermaston or offered a job at Aldermaston. I didn't want to do this.
So that had been working on
atomic weapons. Because my boss, Corner, he went to Aldermaston and he became head of their physics section. So he's quite senior quite quickly. And our director at Fort Halstead was Dr. Penny, who became head of nuclear business. So he's quite a famous name. So a lot of the people from Fort Halstead would end up in Aldermaston or Harwell or their various establishments. So that was a rapidly growing industry. That was a new industry. And we were doing some calculations for them on our punch card machines before the computer came, and then some of it got switched onto the Pilot Ace. And Dr. Corner, who was, say, in charge of the physics at Aldermaston, very secretive, he was having some stuff done by our punch card people, and he came over and he saw some other stuff, which was labelled nuclear or something. He said, hey, you can't put that on. And our other one said, sorry, Dr. Corner, that's nothing to do with you. That's some work we're doing for Howell. Because Howell was the civilian side and Aldermaston was the weapons side. So they sent us a lot of stuff. At one stage, we were just overwhelmed with work from Atomic Energy and from RAE at Farnborough, who were soon to get their own machine. In the 1950s, there was a disaster to the Comet aeroplane, the Comet disaster. I don't know if it blew up or it blew up in flight, but it was a big loss then. And they instituted an analysis of what could have gone wrong. And so I think they took a model of a comet and subjected to water pressure and measured all sorts of things. And this was a rush job from their point of view, and was very lucrative from our point of view. But they were very greedy in wanting lots and lots of time. And the members of our own division were also getting strongly interested in using the computer. We had a new section of theoretical physicists who demanded a lot of time. And so there's quite a conflict. And in the end, I had to induce a ration that NPL should have at least 10% of our total time to satisfy these one or two internal people who are creating. It's our machine, why can't we use it?
So for how long were you the only computer that was available? The Pilot Ace was built as a prototype to the Ace.
Yes.
And then after that you had the Juice. Was that the one that was sold commercially?
It was an engineered version of the Pilot Ace. So it was a tidied-up version, both electronically and in terms of the order code, but if you programmed one, you could program the other. You had to learn one or two new numbers. There were other machines around, but not in government. Well, RAE and Nuclear Engine started with us because we're in government, and I suppose it would have been awkward for Aldermaston to go elsewhere. I mean, Jim, the bloke who programmed their work, they didn't talk about their work. Just called STP.
So did you ever find out what exactly this was for?
We knew roughly what it was because we were doing the same work on the punch card machines for Harwell. When the nuclear atoms get together, they can get together in a nice friendly way and you can retain the energy and it becomes nuclear energy and becomes electricity. But when you let them get together more violently, you get an explosion. That was the only difference. It was exactly the same calculation, but it's the mix. One would just produce nuclear energy and the other to produce an atomic bomb.
Were they ever tempted just to take and use the Pilot Ace purely for the academic work?
Or for NPL? Well, for most of the time, the balance was fine. Our people had their whack and the other people had their whack and the other people might have to wait for their answers. There's one period where there was a lot of pressure particularly from Farnborough, Mr. Comet, and one or two of our users got a bit irate. But we worked till 9:45 every night. We had an evening shift, which had one operator in, doing fairly standard work, so they knew what they'd have standard jobs. Then they got a half day off that day or the next day or later on Saturday morning. Saturday morning was a whole day's leave, so they liked to have Saturday morning off. for their half-day loop. But, I mean, the work was building up, but then quite quickly there are other machines available. Our customers were getting their own machines. Mm. Aldermaston got a large IBM machine and pinched two or three of our staff. And Farnborough got a Deuce, then they got another Deuce. So it was just a temporary thing.
So the Deuce was the computer that came after the Pilot A?
Yes. Essentially the same machine, same speed, but it was enhanced. But they sold something like 40 Deuces.
These things were enormous, is that right? I've seen a picture and it's kind of half a room.
The Deuce would be longer than this, probably.
Okay, so something like 5 metres?
That is sort of... Oh, I don't know what a metre is.
About 5 metres by, two and a half, something like that.
Yeah.
Were these very big investments for the companies at that time?
I'm trying to think what a new Deuce cost. I think it was something like £30,000. But the later ones were very much more than that. I don't think we paid for our Deuce because we had given them all the know-how.
Did they sell many of them, or did IBM take over?
Around about 40. Mm. Mostly for scientific work, 4 or 5 aircraft firms, probably about 3 within Inchlechic itself, because it had major electrical works. I mean, it did power electrics.
And was that just in this country, or did they go abroad as well?
One went to... Australia. I can't think of any other. I formed a Deuce Users Association. We used to meet every couple of months or so at different sites, but you never went to Australia. But people would host the meeting, or we'd have them in town. English Electric had one as a bureau just for doing calculations like we were doing. That was in town in Marconi House, which is at the foot of Aldwych in the Strand.
What's your kind of industry and society in general think of them? I mean, whether they kind of embrace it and think of this wonderful new technology that was going to make things easier, or were they seen as kind of a bad thing and they were going to replace people and people were going to become redundant?
There was very little talk of being a bad thing until they started using them for commercial work in banks. They thought that they were going to lose all their staff would be replaced, but it didn't really happen. I mean, the people would be relocated, but it created as many new jobs as it lost old jobs, really, because you suddenly discover you do far more things that you hadn't done before. Mm. So it was talked about, and I encouraged it to be talked about on university courses, because the courses which I was involved in, I was validating courses after I retired, and a lot of them lacked this social impact. Mm. So they all included a module on the social implications, because, I mean, there were good things and there were bad things. A good thing I quoted was that there was a girl guide assaulted up the road here, and a white Vauxhall of a certain make had been seen driving off. Mm. So they then carefully went through all the records of white Vauxhalls in the area, very long process, doing it by hand. And if, of course, they'd all been registered on computer, you could pick up the white Vauxhalls in no time at all. Mm. So I said, but supposing you're just arriving home and you see a car driving off from your house, it's obviously been in your house, and you think you've caught the number. And so you get the number, you tell the police, but actually your number was wrong by one of its digits. Mm. So the police find out who owns the car that you've reported. They go around to your house and say, do you have this car? And yes, and my son's got that car. And where is he? And likely story. And of course, it's not him at all, because they've got the wrong car.
Right, so I guess it's the same kind of arguments that come up in DNA and genetic evidence in trials.
Yes. So, I mean, there are good things and bad things. Mm. And there used to be a saying called GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. And if you just make a mistake in your input to your program, you'll get rubbish in the output.
Mm. I've always got to be aware of these human errors that can creep in.
Yeah. And of course, human errors are happening all the time with computers, and computers are being blamed, but quite often it'll be a human error on the computer. The computers are very reliable.
When you were working at MPL, were you ever kind of aware of the future impact that this might have? I mean, you were there kind of sitting there working on the very first computer. Did you foresee that in every home, in every business, they'd become so integral?
Don't forget, I left MPL a long time before you were born. I left at the end of 1977, and you were born in 1986, I think.
Yeah.
Isn't that right? And a lot of these changes that you're suggesting occurred to me after that, when I was working in a slightly different environment. At NPL, you only saw the things that were helping in the mathematical world, and I don't think there's anybody who would ever have lost a job because of anything that we ever did at NPL. I don't think the Ordnance Survey would have reduced their number of people. I mean, their natural wastage in a job like that would be sufficient to cope with that sort of thing. Because it couldn't have been a very exciting job reading off these things and doing massive and massive calculations. Mm-hmm. And then, God, there's another one.
Yeah, I mean, I just find it a bit crazy to think that that's what people were employed to do and that's what they spent their time doing. It just seems a bit like a different world now.
Well, it's what we were doing in Cambridge during the war, to be honest. I mean, we do one trajectory and you hand it in and then you give you another one. Mm-hmm. Very similar thing, do that. And there were some of my colleagues who didn't like it, some who didn't like just using a machine. They were lousy at it. They weren't great at doing their job. But, of course, they didn't last very long. They moved on. I mean, one of them became a prof at Imperial College. Face you know. I don't think he's there now, Professor Whitrow. No, he'd be older than me. He'd probably be about 95. Mm. I think he became professor in the philosophy of science or something like that.
Oh, OK, that's quite close to home for me.
Oh, well, G.H. Whitrow, W-H-I-T-R-O-W.
OK.
If you want to make a note. Mm. I don't know how long he was there. During the war, Churchill had a scientific sidekick, and Whitrow was one of his students, an Oxford student. Mm.